Oh, I was going to give maybe a little background of how they used to live in New York.
Give us your recollections of the Lower East Side.
Yeah. Okay, let's let me close the door and we'll get started.
Turn us on.
I don't recollect much really before I was about four or
Can
five.
Can I just give us the date of this?
Yeah.
If you don't mind. Fourth interview with Philip Baskin, June 4th, 1985. At the conclusion of our last interview, Mr. Baskin, you volunteered to go back to your early years in New York's Lower East Side and share with us some of the human interest experiences of that period.
Well,
it's all yours.
I think I went to New York, as I told you. I was born in Meadowlands, but I was moved to New York when I was just a baby. And, of course, I don't recollect much before I was about four or five. But I think somewhere in that period I start to remember some things. And it was, as I told you before, it was really where a lot of immigrants had settled. And there were all kinds, a lot of Jewish people, but there were Italians and other ethnic groups all around. We lived about two blocks on Mansion Street, which at that time was two blocks off the East River and very close to the Williamsburg Bridge. So we were very close to Delancey Street.
The famous Hester Street?
Yeah, well, we weren't too far from there. And we lived in a six-story tenement. There were a number of them around there. And, of course, there were no elevators. You just walked up and down. And I can't remember if they were inside plumbing or not. It seemed to me we used to run outside. But
was it your brothers also?
My brothers were there, all three of us. And we lived in a very crowded apartment, my mother and father and my two brothers and myself.
Your father was living in
He was living, he died when I was seven, so he was living until that time, and the quarters were very crowded, I recall, but, you know, we didn't know any different, so we didn't have television, and we didn't have an automobile. The only automobiles I ever rode in, one of my uncles, would come down occasionally. He was the big man in the family because he had a car and he was doing well. He had a parking lot. So he was making a pretty good living even during the Depression. So occasionally we'd get a ride on his automobile. I don't know if I tell you, my mother was a bug on education. She wasn't very well educated formally. You know, I don't think she went past third.
You were saying your mother was a bug on education.
Yeah, and as I don't think she got herself ever got past more than the third or fourth grade. But all her life she listened to radio reports about news events, and she would read newspapers. She taught, you know, she could read, and she was always pushing us. For some reason, I learned to read very early.
How about your father? Was he minded that way?
Yes, but, you know, in those days, he was out working. Most of our relationship was with my mother. What little family relationship you would have would be with her. And I remember we used to go to public school. She got me in when I was about either five or five and a half. I can remember vaguely some objections from the school officials saying that I looked too young to go to school because you had to be six at that time. But she gave him some story, you know, and somehow I got in. And she never objected to me reading, in fact, encouraged me. And I would read constantly. I'd go to bed and I'd read under a 15-watt bulb, you know. And then in the morning, I'd get up early and read. I'd roll up the curtain in the shade and read by the light. And I used to read walking in the streets to school. In fact, people used to take me across the street. You know, it's funny how you get that way. You don't know what it is.
You're just motivated.
Well, but you don't know why. After all,
yeah.
I wasn't raised any differently. And the fact that my mother never discouraged me, you know, always encouraged me, maybe made a big difference too. Although my middle brother, Jerry wasn't that interested in it, you know. Seymour was more serious about things, but of course at that time he was only about 3 or 4 years old. At any rate, it was a funny kind of life in those days. Of course, I said there was no television, and the radio, you know, was just coming in. I can remember the old Crystal radios, some vaguely. And so the world that you lived in was the one, your immediate environment, really. And, I can't recall knowing much about anything that went on outside that environment, and I think that was typical of most of the people that lived there at the time. Everybody was interested in, like Tevye says, scratching out a living, you know.
They were preoccupied with
them. Yeah, and of course, up until the Depression, they're able to do so, and our world, our commercial world, was peddlers. I mean, I think I told you my father was in the bakery business, and he drove a horse and wagon and delivered baked goods. And my grandfather candled eggs and delivered eggs with a horse and wagon. So,
did your mother work at all?
My mother didn't work in those years. She was busy raising the kids, and she's a very good housekeeper and very good cook, and that's the way, you know, they were raised. And, in fact, I can't recall any woman working, you know, unless maybe they did some housework. But when they were married, their job in those days was to take care of the house and the kids.
Well, not bring the work to the home?
What's that?
Didn't the women very often bring work
sometimes,
to the home?
Sometimes, yes, yeah.
Sort of an extension of the sweatshop.
Yes, but I don't think my mother got into that.
See.
At least I don't recall. And but she did a lot of cooking and baking. She was a mm-hmm. bug on cleanliness, you know, and so forth and so on. She was very strict with us.
Did relatives live close
yes,
by?
Yes, we had no immediate relatives on the street, but we had relatives, for example, one of her sisters, her sister and husband had a shop, I think a bakery shop on Houston Street, which was a big shopping street then, and still is a big, if you go to New York today, it's still well known as a shopping area. But, so they were, in our eyes, fairly well off. You know, anybody who had anything in those days was well off. And, you know, for recreation, there wasn't much in the way of recreation. Like, in the summer, we didn't have swimming pools to go to, so people who could swim would maybe dive into the East River, which was very polluted, oily at the time. We'd get our, in the hot summer days, we would stuff up the sewers, and then we'd open the fire hydrants, and then fill the streets up to the curb, you know, and splash around there. And the street was really the playground. We'd play stickball, and of course there wasn't a lot of traffic. So when a car came down, the horn blew, and you got out of the way, and then you went back to your stickball, whatever other game you were playing. And we used to bounce balls, of course, off the stairs leading up to the tenements. That was the way people lived in those days. And as I said, we didn't know any better. And of course, some of us got a little bit mischievous or wild. In those days, they didn't keep statistics on juvenile delinquency. And the police were a little more forgiving in those days. And rather than run you into a juvenile court or something, they'd bring you to your mother, and then your mother would beat the hell out of you, you know.
Of course, the infractions were probably not so severe.
Well, there was some petty thievery, too, for example, and all the, my mother, too. If she took us on a subway to visit our relatives, we never paid. She never paid for us. Of course, I was old enough and tall enough, so I was supposed to be paid for. But she'd shove us under the turnstile. And I can't remember ever paying for a subway ride when I was a kid. And of course, at that time was a nickel. The same thing. We had a lot of peddlers with little push carts. They'd be selling maybe coconut slices, or little bits of candy or fruit, and that's how they made their living. For 2 cents, you can get a handful of stuff. Well, we never had 2 cents or 5 cents, so we used to run along behind and try to snatch a piece of coconut from the peddler's wagon and run like the devil to get away, you know. So
they sold items besides foodstuffs, though.
Yes, sure. But we never bothered with anything but the food. So it was, if you see movies today, back in those days, you see the tenements and the carts and the horses, and that's the way it really was.
How many rooms did you live in there?
I don't recall. It couldn't have been more than three at the most. Mm-hmm. Maybe two or three, I don't know. Probably about three. And I can remember when we ate, it was a very small area. You know, it's funny that I don't remember more about that because I was there until I was about 8 years old. And you'd think by that time you'd remember more about it.
What do you remember about the schools?
Well, we went to public schools, and of course, I'd go to Cheder afterwards, mm-hmm. too. And they, I don't remember much about the schools except... Really don't. It was just a mixture of a lot of different people, and I did well. I did all right. And it was strange. Well, the way we used to try to get some recreation. You know, I told you we never had swimming pools. Well, when I was about, I can't remember, but maybe about 6 years old or seven, perhaps. There was a swimming pool in one of the school buildings, or some building, some recreation building. And I'd never been in a pool. So I wanted desperately, and they had sort of an open day, or they were giving tryouts or something. Well, I didn't know how to swim, but I was determined to swim in a pool. So I went, and I dove in, and of course I never came to the top, and they had to pull me out of the water. But, that was my first swim in a pool, and the kids, they had their battles, and it's pretty much the way you sometimes see it in the movies, you know. Mm-hmm. It's so far gone from what things are today. It's hard to believe, and yet. And the way the families got their recreation, except for maybe the rare day when maybe you get out to Coney Island, either by subway or if some chance perhaps we'd drive out with my uncle, there was really no recreation. You made your own. And if you went to the movies, when I went to the movies, I stole my way, and I used to wait till the crowd would come out from the exit doors, and then I'd try to slip in while the crowd was coming out.
You were a juvenile delinquent.
I was a juvenile delinquent. And sometimes, like on a Saturday when it wasn't school, And after Sunday, I would I'd go in and I'd watch the movies up close. I'd sit there maybe for 6-7 hours watching the movies 2 or 3 times. And in those days, you know, when they had the movies, there was a pianist, some guy playing the piano, because they were silent movies.
And, you was know, it the roller type piano, or did they really play?
No, they sometimes played a regular piano, and they'd play music, you know, while the movies wanted to give some background to it. And I remember the first talking picture that was the Al Jolson movie.
Jazzy.
Yes, yeah. Okay. I remember that very distinctly while I was still in New York. So that must have been when I was about 8, I suppose, the late 20s, wasn't it? Yeah. Well, then when the Depression hit and my father had died, there was really no way for my mother to, you know, to take care of us and make a living. And that happened to a lot of families, you know, during the Depression. They had a terrible time down there. And so we moved to Washington, PA, where, of course, conditions were a lot better. The reason I think my mother moved there, had an Aunt Annie, who also was a, she and her husband ran a store in Tylerdale, which was the lower ethnic part of Washington, PA. Yeah, I don't know if I told you that before. And there were all kinds of ethnic groups there too, and she, my Aunt Annie, had picked up enough of about 6 or 7 different languages to deal with the people, you know. She could talk some Polish and some Italian, and I remember during the Depression they carried a lot of people, you know, give them food and not get paid for a while.
What was the cheder situation like?
Oh, well, I went to
recollection of that.
Yeah, I went to cheder. I remember in Washington, PA, particularly. I used to go to cheder right after public school.
I was referring to New York.
Well, I went there, but I don't remember as much about that.
See.
But I know in Washington, PA, every day after school, I went to cheder. In fact, my mother one time thought maybe I'd go to yeshiva, but that would have really done something to the rabbinic, wouldn't it? But, so, and we had a much nicer life there in a way than New York.
Well, it was probably more rural.
Well, Washington at that time had about almost the same amount of people they had now, about 30,000.
It wouldn't have been as congested.
Oh, no, it wasn't nearly as congested. And we lived in just a little frame house. It was almost like a toy house. And on the first floor in the front was just a little candy store that my mother had. And I think I told you we used to sell candy.
Yes,
And we had our share of... Jerry and I, particularly, not Seymour. Seymour was always a good boy and a favorite of everybody, but Jerry and I were always getting into trouble. And in neighborhood fights, and I was always getting paddled in school. I mean, the teachers liked me, and I got along, I got good grades, but somehow, almost every day I was in that cloakroom for one reason or another, assuming the position, you know. In those days, you didn't dare go home and complain to your parents. If I'd have told my mother that I was paddled, she'd have beaten me again. Mm-hmm. So you didn't complain at home. So it isn't like today when you have lawsuits because of teacher paddle.
Do you recall any festivities in the East Side? I mean, weddings or holidays?
Yeah, but...
How were they celebrated?
Well, you know, that was their whole... In those days, the only life they had were those... the holiday, and getting together with families. A big thing, a big night would be for families just to get together in somebody's home, just sit around and talk, and... Maybe if somebody well off, they'd have a bottle of whiskey, or there'd be some soft drinks, or, you know, My mother was always making cakes and stuff like that. So that was a big evening.
We've lost a lot of that, haven't we?
Yeah, lost a lot of the family thing. And I think because there was nothing else to do and no place to go, so there was really a very close-knit relationship in those days with family. And I remember our family being very, very close. I mean, they fought all the time, like families do, you know, but they were very close, and they were always together, you know, on holidays or to visit with each other, because nobody could afford, really, to do anything else. In fact, I remember when I came to Washington, PA, I think my uncle drove us out. And that was an experience for me, because I think it took about 10 hours, you know. And in those days, if you made that trip without at least one or two flat tires, you immediately thought the millennium of hell, you know. And you couldn't believe it without the radiator bursting or the tires going flat, you know. It was quite an adventure. And in those days, once the New Yorkers got past the Hudson, they never said they were going to Pittsburgh. They were going west. The minute they crossed the Hudson, they were going west. So, very insular and very family-oriented in those days. And very helpful to each other, you know.
How were the relationships with other ethnic groups in the town during school?
You got along. Sometimes you'd have your fights with them, but everybody seemed to sort of live and let live in a way. And I don't remember, maybe because I was so young in the East Side, I don't remember too many problems down there. But there may have been. And I remember another one of the recreational activities we took, and we would, if you'd find an abandoned warehouse or tenement, it was just great to explore. I don't know how many times we'd explore the same old wreck, you know. That was one of the things you did for recreation.
It was an adventure.
Yeah, and we didn't know from camps or things like that. That's about the thing that impressed me most, I think, about those days was the close family, because everybody was in the same boat, primarily. And for example, one of my sisters lived, one of my mother's sisters lived in the Bronx. They had quite a family, but one of her daughters was married to somebody who was a seltzer salesman, and he made his living delivering seltzer bottles, and they schlepped these cases up and down, you know, 3, 4, 5 stories, and that's the way he made his living. So it was fairly elementary.
Who was instrumental in bringing your family to this country?
I don't know. They all came over. I mean, they just swarmed over, all of them.
But
I don't even know
didn't.
If my mother's name was the right name. I don't think she knows either, because she came over as a baby. She came over when she was very young, so... And they used to lie, you know, and everybody knew they were lying when they came over. In fact, it's a very funny thing. When my mother and one of her sisters, my Aunt Annie, came over, that's the one who lived in Washington, PA. They weren't citizens, even though they married husbands who became citizens, because the law changed. At one time, if your husband became a citizen, the wife automatically.
It's automatic, yes.
But then the law was changed, so my mother was never a citizen for many, many years, and neither was Annie.
Yes.
So when we came to Pittsburgh, well, this was, I think, even after the war. We were here, my brothers, Jerry and Seymour and I. We decided maybe they ought to get naturalized. So we got my mother in and tried to figure out what boat they came over on. and their names. And, well, finally we got her naturalized. But we had a lot of trouble with my aunt. And when we brought her in down to the naturalization people, we got a call from them, and they said, you know, we want to naturalize your aunt, but she's just telling us nothing but lies. She says, can't you tell us what happened? Well, what you have to understand about that, that was very revealing, because there was always, in the East Side, and in all of these people, ingrained a deep distrust
of officials
and of politicians. I can't tell you how many times my mother would read about a politician and say, they're all crooks. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the way they felt. And so when my aunt went to the court, she felt she couldn't tell them the truth. So she was making up what she thought
was what they wanted to hear.
Well, anyway, we finally got her naturalized, too. But it was funny how they felt about those things. And my mother, I can remember her listening to the radio, and she'd shake her head. She said, those dirty crooks. I mean, no matter what they did, you know, they never trusted them. And we're always
wary. That probably
goes
back, don't you think, to
the European, sure, yes, to the European days.
And the attitude towards the Tsar and so on.
Oh, sure. No, and when they came over, they all told lies. Like, the only way someone could get over and say, well, they're part of this one's family. So they take their name. That's why you don't know with some of them what their names really were. Now, my mother says her maiden name was Tiger. You know, and that's what we've always used, but who knows? And it just isn't like today where everything's clean on computers, you know. No, and Ellis Island must have been a madhouse.
I was going to say, do you recall any new family members arriving?
No, because when I came, you know, when I came to New York, I was a baby, and my mother was already, had already come over, so I never really went to Ellis Island, but it had to be absolutely a madhouse. And I'm trying to remember if I ever got past Houston Street when I was a kid in the East Side.
You
never went anywhere, except maybe, I think maybe once or twice we went to Coney Island, or maybe to visit my grandfather in Brooklyn.
How come he strayed so far away?
Yeah, well, and then one of my... one of my father's brothers lived in Brooklyn. In fact, this summer, I think we're going to try to get the whole family together. And there are a lot of them still in New York.
And you have a sizable family still?
Yeah, in New York, and on both sides. My mother's, you know, my mother came from, in a way, an unusual kind of family. She had, I think there were seven sisters. Or eight, and some of them were half-sisters. Believe it or not, her mother, in those early days, I mean, way back, got a divorce. I mean, that's unheard of. As Tevye would said, it's unheard of, right? I wish I had her pictures at home. But she must have been quite a girl, because to get a divorce in those days, so then she remarried, so my mother had half-sisters. And one of them lived in Bayonne, and several lived in Brooklyn. And Annie, of course, lived in Washington, but most of them were located in and around New York.
Was Annie the aunt you mentioned last time that you said was quite a colorful character?
Oh, yes. They were all almost off the wall. They were all characters. I mean, I had an Aunt Rose that you wouldn't believe. Absolutely wouldn't believe. She was a lot of fun, good-looking woman, loads of fun, and it was her husband was Irving. He was an uncle. They were the ones who were well off. I mean, compared to us, they were really well off. And he always had a car, and they always made a living. They could go places, you know. She was always better dressed. And they were all nice people, but they were really characters. I mean, I guess you almost had to be to survive, you know, because nothing was really normal as we know it today. And bitter fights all the time between husbands and wives in those days.
No family counseling.
And yet they stayed together, and the family stayed together. And I can't tell you the violent arguments. I remember violent arguments. And the way they talked to each other, something like my Rose and Irving would talk to me. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, it makes Archie Bunker look like the most peaceful guy you ever saw in your life. And then my Aunt Ida and her son loved the seltzer salesman. I always felt sorry. Even as a kid, I felt sorry for him. And then when I came back when I was 16 from the home, from the orphanage, I lived just for a few months in New York. And he was still married to her daughter. He was still delivering seltzer. And he was still getting abuse from the family. I mean, he was a guy working. He always made a living. Always getting abuse, you know. And but the families, that just seemed to be part of family life in those days. You don't get
they
that
accepted.
So much. Yeah, that was just part of living. And the next day, they pick up and start all over again. So, and that was true between the sisters. Always they'd be fighting, you know. My mother, I think, was sort of fairly mild, although when it came to us, when it came to disciplining us, she wasn't so mild, let me tell you.
Maybe you boys gave her a hard time.
Well, Jerry and I were always in some kind of trouble. As I said, Seymour was always the favorite of the neighborhood. He was a nice kid.
Why did you leave New York then?
Well, as I said, there was no way to make a living for my mother. And she thought if we came to Washington, she was close to her sister. And so we had a relationship in those days with cousins, you know, like Annie's kids we knew very well. And in New York, we knew my father's brother's children very well. In fact, that's the ones we're going to try to get a reunion with today. Yeah, there are a couple of cousins in New York that we've always been sort of close to. We were closest to, so we're going to have a family reunion this year.
Well, you look back on your time in New York as a very rich, colorful experience.
It was very colorful. And now, you know, it's a strange thing. We probably got our hang-ups, different kinds of psychological hang-ups, from those kind of that kind of an environment, upbringing. And yet, I think it was easier for kids than it is today. I mean, kids today have so many choices to make and so many temptations and between television and, you know, all the modern communication methods. They're just, kids today at 12 are exposed to so much that I think it's more difficult for them to adjust to today's society than it was for us.
You only had one goal, and that was to survive.
To survive, yeah, we didn't know from Boris. I mean, we didn't know, I never knew that people lived so good, you know.
Well, they didn't really.
No, I'm talking about other people.
You know, I
mean, I didn't know there was a wealthy class. I mean, it just didn't occur to me. We never were exposed to it. And you never saw it, you know, on television and so forth. Whatever psychological hang-ups that kind of environment brought about, maybe were not as bad as some of the hang-ups kids have today with all the benefits that they have.
What were the arguments mainly about when you say your sisters were fighting, your uncle's fighting with his wife?
Doesn't matter. I think that was part of relief from the tension of living in those times.
And the proximity.
I mean, you know, if you're Mm-hmm. You're in a little two or three room apartment with a bunch of, it doesn't take long for nerves to get frayed. And I think that was just part of it. And trying to get through the days, you know, and try to make ends meet was a problem to the, not to the kids it wasn't. I mean, I didn't know what the problems were, because I always ate. My mother always had some food. And, it is surprising how they managed to get along. And, I know, as I said, I think the most outstanding thing was the close family relationship and ties, because, you know, they were all in the same boat. And they all came over about the same time, all had the same basic backgrounds and problems. And very interesting period, I think.
I guess that about covers it.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, thank you, Mr. Baskin. Just a little addenda to what we've already recorded.
Rich
and colorful period.
Yeah, not really important, but...
But a lot of human interest.
A lot of human interest. The people were very warm with each other in those days. That I know.
We've lost some of that.
Even when they were fighting.
They were caring.
There was a warmth there, yes. Yeah.
Sounds like you missed that.
Well, I think...
all of us in nuclear families.
Yes. And, you know, people separate today. I mean, here I have a daughter now in Tucson. It's hard to keep as close to a daughter in Tucson as if she were in the same city. Well, in those days, everybody clung together. So that explained a lot of it. Okay.
Okay, sir. Thank you.